Welcome to the Health and Self-Care Podcast. I'm Dr. Kate Staveley, a GP from Somerset. And today my guest is someone who's well known to yourself, but he is here as our expert in memory problems. Peter, do you want to introduce yourself?
Yes, I'm Peter Bagshaw, also a GP in Somerset. And I don't often say it because it's not relevant to our podcast, but I'll just mention that I also hold a couple of other hats. So I was dementia lead at Somerset's ICB. I was the Southwest Dementia Lead for several years, and I'm currently the National Clinical Engagement Chair for the DEMON, which is Dementia AI Research Network.
So I think that puts you squarely in the role of our local expert.
And we might discover otherwise as the podcast continues.
We're also very pleased to welcome David, our producer today, who is going to act as our, David, what are you going to do?
Now, non-clinician, I think is probably a good way to say it. I'm the non-clinician in the room. Yes, the every person. But yeah, they're really interested to be a part of the discussion. Thank you.
And David does actually have a role in mental health, although it's not as a clinician. You're a manager within the ICB who helps run some of the projects for mental health, and dementia is one of those projects that you're particularly involved in, isn't it?
That is correct. I have been up to date. Things are changing, but that is correct as of the moment we record this episode. Right.
So what we thought we'd talk about today is I've had a lot of people recently ask me, should I be worried about my memory? And I thought that's quite an interesting question, because we've talked about dementia in the past and when people develop dementia. And certainly I've just recently been through the death of my mother with dementia. So I've seen it sort of firsthand. But I've also got a lot of girlfriends who have gone through the menopause or postmenopausal, who have what they describe as brain fog, and that affects their memory. So, Peter, when do you think people should start worrying about their memory?
Well, it's going to make a rather short podcast, but my answer in a nutshell, Kate, would be that if somebody says, should I worry about my memory, you almost always don't have to, because it seems to be one of the features of dementia that we're unaware of the memory loss that occurs, certainly in the early stages. But as I say, that's rather a short answer to your question. So we'll unpack it a bit more. And I think it's fascinating you mentioned the menopause. We increasingly realize that there are lots of other things apart from dementia that cause memory problems. Long COVID brain fog, absolutely. Chemotherapy brain fog, again. And I've had people with long COVID who've actually failed their dementia assessment tests, but they don't have dementia. They've just got this long COVID brain fog. So a really interesting and topical question.
Just to ask as well, so I believe that other things such as when people are addicted to substances or use alcohol excessively and things like that, that can also affect memory. Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely. And lots of other things as well. So most patients I see who come in saying they're worried about their memory, in fact, they've got either anxiety or depression, because that seems to give this sort of sensory inattention. That definitely affects memory as well. So yeah, you're absolutely right, David.
It's important to remember that there's different aspects of memory. And memory is a term that encompasses lots of functions within the brain. So there's the storing of information long-term, your long-term memory, but there's also short-term memory. Can I remember why I've gone into the sitting room to go and fetch something? What was it? Peter, are you able to describe the difference between the different types of memory?
Very roughly. I've been put forward as an expert, but I'm not sure I have the expertise to describe what's going on in terms of neurological function. But that's a really good point, Kate. And certainly in the world of dementia, this distinction between long-term memory and short-term memory is really important. So with dementia, and we think it's due to build up of proteins in the brain, tau and amyloid and so on have been cited, particularly in Alzheimer's, that seems to affect the short-term memory, whereas the long-term memory seems to be preserved for a lot longer. And particularly, for instance, with things like music, many people will have seen folk who don't even remember their own name, but if you ask them to sing a song, they can sing a song that they learnt in childhood. And one of the features of more severe dementia is that we actually go back in time, because it's that long-term memory that comes into our brain.
And in the past, when we had people who suffered from dementia, we thought it was really important to make them remember what was happening now. And we used to keep, I always remember we used to have clocks up in homes to remind them what the time is, what day of the week it was, what the season was. But that's not the case anymore, is it? I think now we're meant to just go with the flow. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. And particularly if people are getting what's often called BPSD, this behavioral and psychological problems with dementia, which are 90% of people with dementia have at some stage in their journey. So one of the ways of reducing that distress is by just accepting that person's perception of reality, rather than trying to challenge them and tell them that they're wrong. David, you wanted to come in on this.
Yeah, so one thing I can do, I'm not a clinician, but I can read things. So I've Googled what is memory. Psychology Today has a little working definition, which I thought maybe might be a good place to start. So if it's all right, I'll just read that out and we can see if we agree with that or if there's anything you want to add to that. So it says, memory is the faculty by which the brain encodes, stores, and retrieves information. It is a record of experience that guides future action. Memory encompasses the facts and experiential details that people consciously call to mind, as well as ingrained knowledge that surface without effort or even awareness. It is both a short-term cache of information and the more permanent record of what one has learned. The types of memory described by scientists include episodic memory, semantic memory, procedural memory, working memory, sensory memory, and prospective memory. Each kind of memory has distinct uses, from the vivid recollections of episodic memory to the functional know-how of procedural memory. Yet there are commonalities in how memory works overall, and key brain structures, such as the hippocampus, they're integral to different kinds of memory. In addition to memory's role in allowing people to understand, navigate, and make predictions about the world, personal memories provide the foundation for a rich sense of oneself and one's life, and give rise to experiences such as nostalgia.
Wow.
I didn't know there were different types of memory. So that's the news to me, I have to say.
I suppose procedural memory, which they've described there, is muscle memory, isn't it? Because when you learn how to do something, the first few times you do it, you have to consciously think about it. But then there comes a point where your body does it without thinking about it. That must be procedural memory.
And also, like, there are things, like, I know sometimes people with anxiety can panic about breathing, like, especially when you start doing deep breathing, then they might forget to breathe. But obviously you can't forget to breathe, because when you're unconscious you breathe, so there's like sort of a built-in deep memory, isn't there, within our bodies that we don't control.
And I think the other thing we've learned is how unreliable memory is. So there are things we can be quite certain of that have happened in the past that actually were completely mistaken about.
That's a very good point. So my wife often mocks me about a time when I relayed a story to my mum about, like, there was some batch of drugs going around Glastonbury that was like, it was like no good and it was killing people. And she told me that was the plot of Casualty that we've watched 3 weeks previously. In my brain, it had become fact that I'd heard through the grapevine. And nowadays, where we see so much different entertainment and sort of stimuli from different sources, a lot of which is a manufactured entertainment product, how do we know what's real and what isn't? I guess it gets confusing, doesn't it?
That's very true. And there's lots of different things that trigger off different memories as well, isn't there? Like, smells can be very evocative of memories, and you can sometimes smell a smell and then a memory will come back to you, that something you completely forgotten that you knew about, which is quite interesting.
I think that's right. It takes you back into the emotion of how you were when you smelt something. It's a much more powerful thing, as is music. I think these are, are very powerful. And I think it's important to say that not everybody who describes difficulties with memory is on this track to dementia. So there's this thing called benign forgetfulness of old age, which I'm certainly at an age to experience. Particularly with names. I've always been bad at names, but I struggle more and more as time goes by. And I'm hoping that's not early signs of dementia.
Well, I always think your brain's a bit like a giant sponge, isn't it? And you can only put so much information in. And then when you put more information in, some of it's got to dribble out somewhere, hasn't it? That's always been my feeling.
This is the Sherlock Holmes idea, isn't it? So he learned about different kinds of tobacco, but didn't know how to tie his shoes because he reckoned he could only fit a certain amount into his brain. We're all called on to remember so much more these days, aren't we?
And you see that with neurodiversity and autism, you can have people with the most phenomenal memories for details of things. And they have no filters to how much information they can remember. I remember seeing a young man who could take one look at a map and then he could reproduce it after just a few minutes completely correctly, just because the way his memory worked was he'd stored all those facts and all that information, but all that overwhelmed his brain, so that actually from a social perspective he just wasn't able to function very well.
There's a very famous complex series of novels by Proust, which is all based off the fact that this guy smells a Madeleine biscuit in a cafe and it triggers off some kind of sense memory, and he goes on for about 15,000 pages of it. I forget the name of those books, but
A la recherche de temps perdu.
There we go.
There's nothing wrong with your memory, Peter.
No, no.
I've never read it. I just know the title. Life is too short to read it.
It is really, really long, isn't it, that book? But I think, are there some people as well, the claim, I believe it's been proven that they can remember everything from birth, like every single thing. And they can tell you like what day things happened, like 40 years ago and stuff.
Yes.
What's that?
And they can reproduce dates and all sorts of things. Mm, yes.
But as you say, that's not necessarily an advantage, is it?
No.
We can just be overwhelmed by that information. So actually forgetting stuff is really important. And it's one of the things we see, for instance, with PTSD and some mental health problems, that some people, these bad experiences in particular, stay in their brains and they can't be processed and put into perspective. And that can give them really difficult problems. And one of the interesting ways of helping people to deal with PTSD is by this odd EMDR, this going backwards and forwards between left and right in a strange way that nobody quite understands how it works, that allows the brain to somehow integrate that bad memory into other memories and deal with it in a better way.
I believe it's hyperthymesia. That's the condition where people can remember it.
So going back to our original question, when should I worry about my memory? And taking on board your comment, Peter, if I'm worried about my memory, I pray don't have dementia. When should I start worrying about somebody else's memory? So say a parent or a sibling who's acting a bit vague. When should somebody do something about it?
I would say as soon as possible. And increasingly, Kate, although there's not a cure for dementia, we do know lifestyle factors can make a huge difference. So we know that probably about 40% of dementia is preventable by changes in lifestyle. Things like genetics and so on can play a part, but that's almost half of dementia is preventable. So there's increasing evidence that if we can come along early, before we have established dementia, then we can actually make these lifestyle changes and improve outcomes. I don't know if you want me to go into the lifestyle changes.
That would be helpful, yes.
So there have been two more added this summer. The Lancet published it, and they basically fall into two main groups. So the one group are things that are cardiovascular risk factors, so type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol is the recent one that's been added. High bad cholesterol in middle age is the recent one that's been added this summer. And so there's this adage, what's good for the heart is good for the brain. So all the stuff that we know about, like exercise, healthy diet, keeping our weight down, being active in nature, that's good for our heart, is also good for our brain. And then the second group are things that seem to be specific to dementia. So things like depression, social isolation, poor hearing, visual loss, which again is one of the new things that's been shown to be a risk factor, and also head injuries. So those seem to be things that are specific. Now, we can't do anything about past head injuries, but there is evidence that if we have failing sight or failing hearing, then getting either better glasses or hearing aids seems to improve our risks for dementia.
And is that all types of dementia? Because dementia encompasses more than one diagnosis, doesn't it?
Very good question. So almost all the research evidence has been done on Alzheimer's disease, which makes up about two-thirds of dementia. It probably almost all applies to vascular dementia as well. Certainly the cardiovascular risk factors do. The other sorts of dementia are a bit more specialized. So there's one that goes particularly with Parkinson's disease, which is closely related to dementia. It's another neurodegenerative disease. And then there's frontotemporal dementia, which tends to be present not so much with memory problems, but behavior changes. And it probably doesn't apply to frontotemporal dementia. But the one associated with Parkinson's disease, dementia with Lewy bodies, it probably does apply to. So yes is my short answer. Probably yes is the longer answer.
Peter, what about delirium as well? Does delirium have memory loss?
Yes. So delirium is interesting. So delirium is mainly caused by an acute infection, and it presents with acute confusion. So it's a medical emergency. Often it occurs in people who've already got memory problems, and the people around them will notice that their memory suddenly gets worse. And they may misinterpret this as just meaning that their dementia has taken a turn for the worst. But delirium means that you've basically got some toxin in the bloodstream that's making your brain not work well. And so it's very important for somebody who suddenly gets a worsening of their dementia or memory problem that they get acute treatment for this. Because if you have delirium for a long period of time, then you don't recover as well, and your memory doesn't usually get back to what it was. And there's one interesting subset of this I'll mention, David, which is PANS and PANDAS, which can occur in children, and they often present either with acute confusion or sometimes even things like OCD that again is caused by infection.
That's really interesting. Yeah, because it is one of those things where, it does often get confused with other conditions and things, doesn't it? I remember recently I went through a period of quite acute stress around sort of a health problem when I had to put some coursework in for a course I was doing. And one of the first kind of warning bells that went off for me is when I was talking to my son and I said something to him. But when I actually spoke, the words I wanted to say didn't come out properly. And when I thought about it, I realized that I had been reaching more for words that normally would come more quickly to me. So is that something that people should be concerned about? They sort of feel like they're struggling to speak in the way they usually would.
That's more of a sudden stress problem rather than a long-term nerve damage problem. And that's the problem, is trying to, we all go through periods of time where our memories are unreliable. You know, we've all gone into the sitting room, wondered why we're there, forgotten people's names, forgotten dates and things like that. That's normal. And that's often linked with what we describe as brain fog. So brain fog is this sort of rather nebulous idea that your memory's not functioning quite so well. And you can have some quite specific memory problems with brain fog, you know, like names, like people get lost easily, you know, can't follow maps and get disorientated. Peter?
With long COVID in particular, which I've got a personal interest in, they've shown, for instance, with the biobank study, that we lose about 10 years of brain volume following severe COVID. And there's been a more recent study showing that there's a drop in IQ following severe COVID as well. So, yes. But to come back to your point, David, our question was, should we be concerned? When should we be concerned about our memory? And in situations like that, the concern is not that we're developing dementia, and as you said, Kate, long-term neurological problems, is that we're under stress, and we should recognize that as a symptom of stress and do all the sort of distressing things that we've discussed many times on this podcast.
Yeah. And remember that our brain health is as important as all the other health that we have to think about.
Absolutely. David.
So a lay question, if you like it. So what should people do if they are concerned about their memory or somebody else's? What's the first thing they should do? Should they go speak to their GP, or what would you recommend?
Absolutely. And we were talking about other physical causes for memory loss, and that includes things like vitamin deficiency and thyroid disease. So yes, absolutely. If you're concerned about your memory, please go to the GP as soon as possible. So it may well be that they can do tests that show that your memory loss is due to anxiety or depression, and then that can be dealt with. Very often it's due to low B12 or underactive thyroid. And again, that's totally treatable, reversible. And the earlier you get that treated, the better. And then if there remain concerns that it might be the start of a dementia process, you can be referred to a memory clinic. And although the current disease-modifying drugs are not great and they have a lot of side effects, and if you want to, we can talk about that, it does at least show that there are, in the pipeline, treatments that might actually slow down the progression of dementia or even reverse it in some cases.
And it's not just the medical treatment for people who've got early dementia. It's important to start thinking about your lifestyle and things like, you know, is the accommodation they're living in appropriate? Have you got a power of attorney in place so that if their memory gets worse, can you do something to help them? The start of a dementia diagnosis is quite a good opportunity to sort of start planning for the future, because I know with my mother, we were very fortunate that she put in place a power of attorney. And you can get, there's 2 points to the power of attorney. One was for financial affairs and the other was for medical affairs. So we had both in place. And that was really helpful because it meant as her memory started to fade, we were in the position to be able to support her without a lot of difficulty.
It must have been a very difficult time, though. I've had experiences with my grandparents. All of them had different forms of dementia, and it is so tough when it's a close family member like that. So you have our simple cases. It's always a terrible time. But I was just thinking about other things. So I've got a bit of a sort of hypochondriac brain, I guess. And so whenever I get any kind of like recurrent headache or a perceived memory problem, like I discussed earlier, something like that, one of the first things I always go to, and I don't think I'm alone, and Dr. Google would do this as well, is I probably have brain cancer, I probably have a tumor or something like that. So what would be the warning signs of something like that? How can we put people at ease that they probably don't have that?
It would be very unusual to present with a memory problem if you had a brain tumor. Brain tumors usually present with a combination of a specific nerve damaged problem. So maybe a limb that doesn't work very well, or your eyesight is affected, and with a headache as well. It would be very unusual for it to be your memory. Mm. Peter, what do you think?
Yes, absolutely. And if you have a headache, I think the incidence of a tumor causing it is something like 0.1%, isn't it? It's a very low risk, although it's what we all worry about. And the specific red flags for increased pressure in the brain would be a headache that's worse when you lie down, or associated, as you said, Kate, with some sort of neurological symptom, visual defects or loss of limb function, things like that. So, yes, if you have a headache, Dr. Google will always mention brain cancer because they have to be risk averse and don't want to be sued. But actually, that unfortunately increases our hypochondriasis rather than reassuring us.
And actually, one of the best people to go and visit if you are worried about that is your optician, because opticians will often pick up the early signs of a brain tumor by looking at the back of your eye. They can see the raised pressure in your brain at the back of the eye, and it might affect your eyesight. So, you know, it's very easy to get it sorted out if you have a genuine concern.
And another thing that came to mind there, like when we talk about sort of physical things that could cause memory loss, what about if somebody, like, you know, the classic thing in a cartoon where someone gets hit over the head with a pan and then they get amnesia and then they get hit over the head with a pan again and, oh, I'm suddenly better, I can remember everything. Now, obviously, don't try that at home.
I think the memory coming back with the second hit on the head only happens in Tom and Jerry cartoons, not in real life. So no, not recommending. But absolutely, we're recognizing that particularly repetitive head injuries are a very high risk factor, both for dementia and also for Parkinson's disease. And most people remember Muhammad Ali and it's happened to other boxers as well, who developed early Parkinson's disease as a result, probably of repeated brain trauma.
The other group of people to think about with that is footballers. So in my day, footballs were big, heavy leather balls. And if they headed them a lot, a lot of them have had repetitive head injuries. And so you'll see a lot of retired football players who with dementia. I think Bobby Charlton was one of them, wasn't he?
Yes, unfortunately, that's right. And rugby as well. My father had 6 months and post-trauma amnesia from playing rugby and later developed dementia. And we wonder whether that's a factor with him. You'll never know, but yeah, absolutely so.
Yeah, and now in the sports, they're much more careful about concussion, aren't they? And people have to take a couple of weeks out if they've been concussed playing rugby and things like that.
And I believe they've also banned the practice of, I think, under-18s heading footballs, like in practice and things like that and in games. So I don't know if at some point they'll phase it out of the actual sport itself or whether that's just something to protect children. Well, your brain's in a formative state. And that is up to the age of 25, isn't it? Your brain's still growing. And
it's a big bowl of blancmange inside a very solid skull. So it's hardly surprising, really, that it doesn't do it much good to bang it regularly.
And I suppose putting my dementia prevention hat back on, I would say we can't do anything about previous head injuries. We can't do anything about our genetic APOE4 or whatever it is, our genetic roll of the dice. But we can always do something about lifestyle. So more exercise, better diet that we've discussed many times on this podcast. It's never too late to make those changes. And never too early either, actually. A lot of the early signs of dementia we're now recognizing take place about 20 years before it becomes apparent with memory loss. So it looks as though these brain changes occur in often middle age or even earlier. So making those changes early is a good way of improving our brain health.
And Peter, I read somewhere that the early signs of dementia often route finding problems. And I certainly got enrolled in an app that you had to follow a map and find, as a part of the testing for dementia. Is that genuinely something, or is it just Facebook tricking me?
No, that absolutely is. I know the app you mean. And it has been used and it's been quite successful. So yes, that's because it's executive function. So it's having to do one thing and then another thing and then another thing. And so people think of dementia as being a memory problem, and it's partly a dementia problem, a memory problem, but it's also around cognitive function, being able to process information in that sequential way. And that's what the map tests. So no, absolutely right. That's not social media trickery.
I think we're starting to run out of time now a little bit, but I was just interested. I'm not sure we talked about the menopause or perimenopause much. Kate mentioned it at the start. Is there anything specific that people need to know about memory loss and how memory is impacted by those?
No, I mean, mostly that it's not a long-term permanent problem. It does improve with time. I think, I mean, as a woman, I'm very aware that, you know, when I was young, I was blonde and therefore my memory wasn't reliable. Then I was pregnant and I had a baby brain and so my memory wasn't reliable. And then I was menopausal and my memory wasn't reliable. So, there are lots of reasons for your memory not functioning 100%, but then permanent.
That blonde thing's so terrible, isn't it? Such a horrible stereotype. Yeah.
But I used to enjoy it. It was fun.
But you revel in it, I guess, if you like to.
Well, you have no choice, do you?
No, that's true. And, you know, I apologize on behalf of the patriarchy, the horrendous idiot.
Yes.
Anyway.
Likewise. Absolutely. If we can smash stereotypes on this podcast, we'll do it, won't we?
Yes.
Right. Well, thank you both very much. So I think my take home is there are lots of things that can affect your memory. Dementia is one of them and tends to occur later. But on the whole, if you've got dementia, you're not worried about your memory. Would you say that was a fair summing up?
I think that's an extremely fair summing up. I would add lifestyle changes can halve your risk of dementia. So please address those as early as possible. And if you do have concerns about yourself or a relative, go to the GP early, because often you'll be able to have treatment and things that will actually stop you getting dementia and stop you your memory getting worse.
Excellent.
And David, any take home points for you?
No, it's just really interesting. Like you set me at ease a little bit with my hypochondria about some of those other things. I re-listened to this episode in those moments, those dark moments. You go, ah, no, just relax. It's okay. They know what they're talking about.
Well, thank you both very much. And to all of our listeners, remember to go well.
Thank you.
Thank you.